You're listening to another great podcast in the MyMac Podcasting Network.
Welcome to the Essential Apple Podcast, where we talk about Apple and all the Apple-related news and anything else that catches our eye. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Essential Apple, where once again I am joined by Nick. Hello, Nick.
Hello. Steady on. Three weeks in a row.
3 weeks in a row, definitely. Oh my God. Well, yeah, we do our best. We're trying. And hopefully this edition you'll hear slightly improved sound, as I do actually now have a microphone, a proper microphone. I've bought another microphone. My Logitech died suddenly a couple of shows ago. Quite literally, I plugged it in and it sort of showed up and then went red and then wouldn't start and then disappeared altogether. And in the in-between, I tried plugging it into my wife's MacBook and it didn't show up there either, so I have to assume it died. So I now have a new microphone, which is called a V-Top B something or other, 65 or something, which is a nice-looking basic microphone, and hopefully you'll now be able to hear me a bit clearer and a bit less of the rustling and background noise. So there we go. Right. Well, Nick, where shall we start? I don't know.
We could talk about something product that never was.
Yes, we can. Perhaps we should. How about a product that never was? Yes, of course. Project Titan is no more. It started out, Engadget had a report earlier in the week. Apple Car Project reportedly dead. I believe that German.
How many times has this car project actually died?
About five.
That's right. Almost every 6 months, people have said, "Oh, it must be the end of it now," because they've employed all these people, so they must be doing something. Oh no, they've actually sacked lots of people now. Oh, so perhaps it... and now the project, which may or may not have existed, is actually dead.
Yeah, well, as several people described it, the industry's worst kept secret ever, Project Titan, which everybody knew was actually a car project, has when they say officially, this is still only semi-officially as far as I'm aware, according to a leaked internal memo, basically, yes, as official as you're going to get from something that Apple are never going to talk about in public, because they don't talk about unreleased products, and this was never a product.
So what's happened is Tin sent around a letter which says, look, Titan is dead.
Yes.
It's shuffled off its mortal coil.
It is an ex-car project. It is no more. It's still rolling.
The only reason it's standing on that perch is because you nailed it there.
I was going to say, the only reason it's still rolling is because it's going downhill. But yeah.
Yes.
Oh dear. Yeah. So the project, which has been going since 10 years. It's been going for 10 years allegedly, is no more. The leadership have decided that they are going to give up on it. Many employees working on the car will be moved, unsurprisingly, to the artificial intelligence division. I'm guessing some of the people whose, expertise is in actual automotive hardware will be looking to move on or being asked to find themselves something else to do. But
Never mind the Apple Car. They're stopping making the Nissan Leaf.
Mm.
My first electric car. That was a real car. Actually was the car on the road.
And that had a good run, wasn't it? How long's the Leaf been going?
It was originally, I think it was 2011 in Japan, and it got here in late 2012.
So,
and I bought my first one in November 2013.
So a good 10 years then. It's been at least 10, 12 years. So,
but it's about time it went, really, or was replaced with something else, because it's one of the only cars that still doesn't have any thermal management of any sort that's on the roads. So it probably is about time it went. But and the same for the Apple car.
Yes.
That was obviously the problem there. We're having thermal management.
Well, we all know about Apple and their problems with thermal corners, don't we? So
indeed, yes, that's right. They probably made the car, you know, look like the Mac Pro. It was circular, and you sat in the middle, and it just got too hot.
But there we go. Allegedly, it cost $10 billion. Over the 10 years that it ran, a thing that I've seen several articles sort of go, $10 billion over 10 years. But actually, for a company of Apple size, an average of $1 billion per annum in R&D doesn't seem excessive. And I'm pretty sure that Apple have learned an awful lot. You know, the areas that you need to make an autonomous vehicle are not very specific to a vehicle. Real-time operating systems, object recognition, pattern recognition, all those kind of things.
That's right. I mean, you won't get an autonomous car without software, will you? And let's face it, Apple have made quite a good job of software in the past.
There we go. So that was Engadget. I've got a few here. If people want to read, or if they haven't already read about it, which I'm sure most of our listeners probably have. The Verge.
Anyone who actually wrote that it was a Titanic failure should be shot.
Yes. I think I might actually call this Titan Falls. But
yes.
Yeah.
Not a game. No, something falls.
Titan Fall is an anime series, which is.
Right.
A weird sci-fi thing, but anyway, you know, who knows? Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll call it something else. But so I've got a piece from The Verge, The Crash of the Titan. Oh, very good. They're all getting the puns in here, aren't they?
Yeah.
A short history of Apple's doomed car project. This isn't a bad piece. It's not overly long, but it gives a sort of point by point over the years of what things happened.
Is there anything in these that actually says why the press have decided that now is the moment when?
No, not really.
It's dead.
It's all speculation.
Because we've had so many times when it's almost been dead, or it's been redesigned, or they're doing something else, or they're not actually making a car at all, that it makes me wonder why suddenly this bit of news has come out about the whole thing, unless they started to sack people. Well, they haven't. I mean,
I don't think they've actually. Well, I think the whole point is it's this memo which has been leaked, where Tim has officially said, you know, right, if you're in these departments, you'll be redeployed. And I'm afraid some of you who are in things which are no doubt specific to automotives will be asked to look for somewhere else to go. I think the truth is that they've just they started out with a grand vision, as Apple tend to do. And one of the podcasts I was listening to, and I can't remember who, might have been the ATP boys, might have been Apple Insider. But I think, and I agreed with this take, was that back when they started the project, you know, Tesla had just started out, or vehicle autonomy was a big thing, and very big strides were made quite quickly, as is often the way.
Yeah, they were. Yeah.
And I think Apple looked at that and said, well, you know, if Tesla can get this far in 2 years, we could get twice as far in, you know, another 5, let's say. And that time has gone on, that trajectory has flattened off as people have reached the point that they realise that there are some problems in this that are harder. You know,
what I've never been able to get my head round with this, though, is if they really were going to produce a car, I mean, they've got lots and lots and lots of examples in history where companies have failed. Getting a car to market is incredibly hard, and you only have to look at Tesla. I mean, At one point, Elon Musk almost bankrupted himself to get the Model S off the ground. And it's really, really hard. And I don't know why. I know Apple are clever, but I don't know why they. I understand what you were just saying about the potential for autonomy and software and all of that. I just can't see where the making a car seemed like a good idea, because it's really hard. Out of every 10 companies, one might only make it. I've been watching Aptera. Have you seen the Aptera?
No.
It's probably only going to be available in America. It's like a sort of teardrop shaped 1,000-mile electric car, a 2-seater electric car. So like a fairly small one. But they've been working on it for years and years, and they've had so many influxes of funds. They've gone out to crowdfunding and all sorts of things to actually try and get this thing off the ground. And it's still not quite there. Still not quite there. And we're years and years and years in. And
I think
gosh, this is really hard.
I think this might be part of the problem. I think Apple started out with a grand vision and set off, and I suspect at first, it's probably quite easy, as if, you or I could go out in our garage and start doing it. But for people
in the car.
Yeah. I mean, the getting the first steps done, LiDAR and pattern recognition and all that sort of thing, probably not horrifically difficult for people in that sort of things. Yeah. And I think,
but actually tying it all together into a coherent system that can cope with all circumstances is really hard. Really
hard. And I think what's happened is over time, the goal has, obviously kept moving further and further away. And I think now maybe it's the 10th anniversary. Maybe it's not. Who knows exactly? I think maybe they've just looked at it and gone, look, this is still 5 years away. And maybe it's always going to be 5 years away. Let's just cut our losses.
Can it? Yeah, maybe.
Stop it. Give up. The other thing, is, which might have something to do with its genesis, is that Johnny was a massive car head. And so,
yes, that's true.
And so was his friend who joined him at Apple for a while, didn't he? Mark Newson, is that him? I can't remember his name.
That sounds right.
But he was one of Johnny's kind of contemporaries. They were both massive, massive petrol heads. And I think that might have had something to do with it.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised if in 2 or 3 years' time, they don't say, oh, no, Titan's not dead. No, we've just been shelved for a while.
Well, they could do that. They could do that. If some new breakthrough happens in, technology or AI or something else, maybe they will, or maybe they won't. Maybe. Who knows? Yeah. But for now, it's officially.
Also, I'm not convinced. I mean, if the whole project was all about autonomy, I'm not even sure that was the right call in the first place. If you're going to make a car, it can't be all about just one bit of technology that makes it automatic. It has to be to do with the whole car. And that's why I've said probably a number of times when we've been chatting that I don't really think there's a car involved. It just didn't seem to be Apple's thing.
They definitely had, semi-autonomous vehicles, because they had, earlier this month, California DMV records showed that Apple had logged 500,000 miles of autonomous driving throughout 2023, significantly than the year before.
So they have been working on it, haven't they? They've been working on something anyway.
And previously, I think they... they bought a load of VW buses.
I could quite have seen Apple building a plug-in component, effectively, that would replace the guts of a car that someone else would make for them.
Yeah.
And then just slot this thing in and it would just take over. And a little bit of what we already know about the way they would like Apple CarPlay to go. Sounds like they were getting into that area where they'll be just controlling the whole car.
Mm.
And that I can see. But them actually producing a car, I don't think that was ever going to be a thing.
I'm not sure that it was either. I mean, just the you know, they didn't build any prototype cars. All the cars that they were autonomously driving were, I forget what they were, Lexus or something. Not any, you know.
Right.
So also, still, there we go.
I don't think it's any great loss, in all honesty, that Apple have given up on it. Something else I heard was that it was going to be incredibly expensive as well.
Well,
like
I think
100,000.
Yeah, but most people were talking about 100,000, or expecting it to be in that bracket.
I can't see how they would have sold many of those, in all honesty.
No.
That's if they were actually making a car, which I doubt. Obviously, I seem to be talking myself round and round in circles.
Yeah, I know, man. I mean, Apple Insider, their end is... It was reported that Apple's abandonment of the vehicle project was not due to engineering impossibility. The company had already shifted down to level 2 autonomy from level 4. But, I mean, at that point, you're just talking about the level that cars like you and I drive. You know, lane assist and adaptive cruise controls and smart parking. And
that's right, which a lot of vehicles can do now anyway.
Yeah. Apple Insider's take is the end was margins. Apple would never be able to sell vehicles at expected margins, this is their take, not mine, especially with the declining EV market and competitors racing to the bottom price-wise.
That's not true at all.
I don't agree with that, but then they're Americans, aren't they? They're Americans, yeah. You have to remember.
Not
the EV...
true at all. Yes, there has been a slowdown. I think I've probably talked about this before.
Well,
there's
a lot of that.
A slowdown.
I mean, no, the tax, some of the tax breaks and whatnot have been removed, haven't they? So,
yeah. I also think it, I mean, from my experience, I watch a lot of this stuff, and it's more to do with it normalizing. It's starting to level rather than.
Yes.
And the fact that they seem to think that everyone's trying to sell them for £5, it's a bit ridiculous, really. I mean, just go and have a look at the cost of them.
Yeah.
But the prices are becoming, let's put it this way, if I put if I do a search on one of the lease sites now, a number of cars pop up within the price that I can afford. Whereas the year before when I bought this car, it was the only one I could afford. And I think that was probably true of all the others that I bought as I went along. I'm buying off the bottom rung, as it were, of the electric car pile. And there are more about. So the prices have normalized a little bit, but are they cheap? No, absolutely not. Bye-bye, Apple car.
Bye-bye, you know.
I don't know how we managed to talk that long about it, in all of
us. No, nor do I, but there you go. So, there we are. So, there we go. And finally, I've got one here. So, yes, if you want to have a quick look at the timeline, that's The Verge. Apple Insider have a little bit about the cost of it. And in loving memory of the Apple car from the creative block, this is a rather more fun little piece, which shows various renders by various people of what an Apple car might look like. Many of which you've seen. There's the one that looks a bit like a very much softer Cybertruck shape. There's one that looks a bit like a Le Mans GT 24-hour type car.
there's one that looks like the Magic Mouse.
yeah, which I think was generated more for humour than thing. And then, last of all, there's one at the bottom here. The Apple Autonomous created a design which has a 360-degree movable pod for two passengers, which looks like something off Doctor Who, to be honest.
It does, yeah.
But, amusing. It's like an egg on,
that's a bit of
on
fun.
A trolley. But there we go. So, yeah, worth a look just for a laugh at some of the ideas. So we'll move on. I think what we'll do, Nick, is we'll jump ahead before we do the other fairly small stories. We'll jump ahead to the security and privacy, and we'll talk a little bit about the PQ3, which we mentioned last week.
Yes.
Which is the post-quantum secure encryption which Apple is putting out in 17.4 and all the other 0.4s that go with it. And I've had a little bit more of a look. I've listened to a few podcasts where they've talked about it. There seems to be a bit of confusion on some shows exactly about what it is, which is not surprising because it's pretty complicated. But I've linked again Apple's original piece where they explain what they're doing themselves, which is quite long and quite in depth. But it is written for the layman, so don't be put off reading it if you're interested in how it works. But what the most important takeaway is that they're not replacing the current elliptic curve cryptographic method that they use now. They are adding to it this PQ3 protocol, which is based on an industry standard called Kyber. And they explain here that at great length about how they're using a hybrid approach where, in effect, to break the encryption, you would have to be able to break first the Kyber encryption and then the current encryption. So unless you can break both of them, it's effectively secure. So here we go. I'll just read this bit. More than simply replacing an existing algorithm with a new one, we have rebuilt the iMessage cryptographic protocol from the ground up to advance the state of the art in end-to-end encryption and to deliver on the following requirements. Introduce post-quantum cryptography from the start of a conversation, so all communication is protected from current and future threats. Mitigate the impact of key compromise by limiting how many past and future messages can be decrypted with a single key. Use a hybrid design to combine new post-quantum algorithm and current elliptic curve algorithms, ensuring that PQ3 can never be less safe than the current classical protocol. Amortize message size to avoid excessive additional overhead from additional security. Use formal verification methods to provide strong security assurances for this new protocol. And then they talk at great length about how this works. Each device with PQ3 registers two public encryption keys and replaces them regularly with fresh ones. A post-quantum Kyber 1024 key, encapsulation public key, and a classical P256 elliptic curve key agreement public key. And these are signed with ECDSA, whatever that is, using a P256 authentication key generated by the device's secure enclave using a timestamp used to limit their validity. And this public key is itself signed by the contact key verification account key for those who use it. Right. And their simple description, quote, simple. When Alice's device initiates a new session with Bob's device, her device queries the IDS server for the key bundle associated with Bob's device. The subset of the key bundle that contains the device's authentication key and versioning information is validated using contact key verification. The device then validates the signature covering the encryption keys and timestamps, which attests that the keys are valid and have not expired. Alice's device can then use the two public encryption keys to share two symmetric keys with Bob. The symmetric key is computed through an ECDH key exchange, which combines an ephemeral encryption key from Alice with Bob's registered 256 public key. The second symmetric key is obtained from the Kyber key encapsulation with Bob's post-quantum key.
Right, is that all clear to you?
Clear as mud.
Clear as mud.
So my understanding from listening to you read all that out is that basically what they're doing is they're giving them a time limit, so they have to be current ones, that they can't just sort of generate anything anytime. And secondly, that there are now two keys, not one.
Exactly.
And the second key is a more complicated sort of key.
Yes.
It's got more twirly bits on it.
It's more, I mean, it's to, was it, to combine the symmetric keys, right, we extract their entropy by invoking, oh, blimey, that gets right, and then they basically mash all these keys together. And then they have salting and hashing and all sorts of things applied to them. Okay. And also they use rekeying with security ratcheting, which means the following keys are generated using more complicated maths, which mean that you can't go backwards anyway.
So to quote the Hitchhiker's Guide, Is it safe? Yeah, it's perfectly safe. It's us that are in trouble.
Yeah, that is true. So, all that said, and if you want to read more about it, do read the thing in depth. And although it sounds complicated, if you follow it carefully, even if you don't understand all the technical terms, you will see what it is they're doing. But I asked our resident security expert Dougie, aka Andy J. If he could give us a really simple primer. So this is what Dougie says. iMessage lacked a post-compromise security. In the signal protocol, your communication keys are constantly updated and ratcheted forwards. This means a compromised phone backup will not be useful for long. You'll replace the stolen keys within a few minutes. Right? In iMessage, this was not true. Public keys were long-lived. In the new update, periodic rekeying using elliptic curve cryptography, i.e. traditional, ensures that compromised keys quickly become useless, both in the future and for decrypting past messages. Encloses This closes an important threat vector. Along with key transparency, this makes iMessage a state-of-the-art cryptographic protocol. Even with these improvements, the remaining problem is that elliptic curve crypto is not secure against future quantum computing advances. This does not matter today, but if such computers are built in the future, they could be used to decrypt past conversations. In this update, Apple has made two key changes. Frequent elliptic curve rekeying, so that your keys are now updated regularly, and a post-quantum secure algorithm, Kyber. This also rekeys, but less frequently, because the Kyber overheads are much higher and eat more space on the wire. The important note here is the two main encryption algorithms are arranged into a combiner, which means as long as one algorithm is secure, nobody will be able to break the encryption, which means Apple will give you the safety of elliptic curve today and PCQ in the future. Right. And then Dougie says, so what does this mean? You can probably say this is overkill. Quantum computers are years away and key compromise is rare. So why should you care about this? As the answer is, you don't really need to care because it is overkill. But sometimes overkill will send a useful message that should be heard by people who are not technical at all. So there you go. It's
they could. I mean, really, they just could have said, we're making everything more secure. And that would have done for me.
Yes. But, you know,
No, that is interesting. That is interesting. I remember seeing one of the Christmas lectures wherever it's from. I can't remember now.
What?
But there are always lectures on for kids at Christmas.
Yes. Oh,
I can't think what.
I've gone completely blank. I've gone.
It's the Royal Institute, Royal something or other.
Yes.
Anyway, I remember seeing one of those that explained public key encryption by literally doing it with two big keys, you know, and that helped me understand public key encryption no end. That's my level, really. Introduce it, very simple end.
It's
leaf. This is just an extension of that, really.
It's the Leaf Christmas lectures.
That's it.
Is it Leaf or?
I think it is. Anyway, it that helped me understand public key encryption, and this seems to be an extension, as he said, it's an extension of that to make it even more secure, which is great. Good. Well done, Apple. Keep going.
Indeed. So there you go. It's quite complicated because these things are by default very complicated. But if you read the Apple piece, it will explain basically how it works. The main thing is that instead of allowing your iMessage keys to stand for a long time, Apple will now use a frequent rekeying of the classical keys, and they will rekey the PQ3 keys. In their piece, they say at a variable time periods, depending on an algorithm based on how many messages you send or have been sending in the conversation and what your bandwidth is like and so on and so forth.
At the bottom here is quite important. It actually says there's a Wibble protocol, which is a backdoor for all the security agencies.
Yes.
Oh no, it doesn't say that.
Indeed. But apparently the security handshake on a single message in standard cryptography is about 32 bits, which is nothing and easily accepted on the overhead. Apparently the quantum Kyber keys take 2K, so you do not wish to be sending one of those with every single message that you send.
Right.
But apparently,
that's bigger than your email.
Yeah, or your message. Bigger than your message.
Or your message.
But the point is they will be rekeyed at a variable frequency based on the number of messages in the conversation and the bandwidth available. And they say at the very least, your Kyber key would be refreshed every 7 days at the absolute minimum.
Yeah, and as Dougie says, great, but it doesn't make any difference, really.
No.
Not at the moment.
It's called, let's do it and be ahead of the game. So
that's right. We're making it more secure now so that you don't have to worry about
worry about it. To go back to the Hitchhiker's Guide, in big friendly letters on the front, don't panic. There we go. All right, so that let's get that one out of the way. Okay, we've got that one out of the way. There's not a lot of other real news at the moment, to be honest. We talked last week about the rumours that the Vision Pro, that people were claiming that it was being returned in droves. I believe Ming-Chi Kuo, rumour. Ming-Chi Kuo, who has said, apparently, that the Apple Vision Pro return rate appears to be around the same as the iPhone 15 Pro, which is about 1%, which apparently is pretty standard for Apple devices. According to the inspection of the repair refurbishment production line, the current return rate for Vision Pro is less than 1% with no anomalies. It's worth noting 20 to 30% of the returns are due to users who do not know how to set up the Vision Pro correctly. Data from Apple Insider suggests this is about the same as the Pro line of phones return to retail.
That's quite interesting. It says about 2 years ago, a source from AT&T told us that their rate of smartphone returns from all vendors combined is about 2.5%, but Apple's is about half that.
Yep.
So that's interesting, isn't it?
Isn't it? And then below that, at the iPad Pro lineup, is returned in the first month after new release about 0.9% of buyers, and the cheapest iPad hits about 1.5% returned in the same period. So based on that, no higher number of people are sending back their Vision Pros than send back any other piece of Apple kit. So Yabu sucks to all those people who probably went on the fact that a few YouTubers went, oh, I've played with it, I'm bored with it, I'm sending it back. So what have we got else? We've got a couple of bits for the Apple TV Plus. One is that Netflix have decided that you will no longer be able to pay your subscription via the App Store. So if you're like me and you currently pay for your Netflix via your Apple, subscribers in some countries, including Canada and the United States, will soon no longer be able to pay for the subscription via the App Store and will need to add a new payment method to retain their account. So I'm not sure, this is not sure exactly when, and as reported, the US Netflix support site says that customers in some countries will need to add a new payment method. So exactly who that affects and precisely when, I can't say. So
yeah, but you do know Netflix, that we love being sent round the houses to buy things, don't you?
Yes, exactly. So there you go. Keep an eye. If you're a Netflix subscriber and you pay through your Apple, subscribe via your Apple account, keep an eye out in case they are pulling that option. I assume if they've got any brains, they will email you and tell you that you need to change. Otherwise, they could lose a load of people just by accident because people
Yes, that's right. Why is my Netflix not working?
Working. Oh, well, sod it. I can't, Oh, well, sod it. I'll subscribe to something else.
Can't be bothered.
Yeah, exactly. Apple TV Plus to get the most exciting TV series to be greenlit in years. This is on T3.com, but you've probably seen it everywhere around if you are looking at Apple TV news. Obviously, Netflix have got the three-body problem, which they will be bringing out later this month. Apple TV have announced that they will be getting a 10-episode adaptation of William Gibson's groundbreaking cyberpunk novel Neuromancer. Are you familiar with that, Nick, or is that?
I recognise the word, but Neuromancer. So I've obviously seen it somewhere, but I've not. I don't know the novels at all.
So there you go. I read Neuromancer and its sequel, semi sort of sequel. Well, pretty much when they were published, to be honest.
Yeah.
So I can't remember much about it. It's a long time ago. But William Gibson is basically pretty much considered to be the father of the whole cyberpunk genre. So, he's very, you know, he's very influential in that. Neuromancer is a very interesting book in the fact that, although in some ways, if you read it now, some of it obviously is dated and feels dated because there's things that he talks about which feel very 80s. The whole the main thing is about cyberspace, what now we think of as the internet, and holds up remarkably well. So I think that would be a very interesting series.
Probably good.
So
we were chatting about Netflix before the show started, and I've lost sort of interest really in most of what's on Netflix. So anything new and sci-fi, that sounds good. I'll give it a look.
Yeah, well, that's coming to Apple TV at some point, probably this year.
Yeah, well, I keep saying about Apple TV, don't I?
Yep. Well, you know, the list.
At some point, I'm going to have to resubscribe.
The list of things that you might be interested in, obviously,
is growing.
Dark Matter, I think, was one I said is supposed to be coming soon. Another sci-fi thing. I'm still struggling with Constellation. I can't decide whether I want to push on with that or not.
Right.
I'm not sure if it's that it's difficult to follow or if it's that it's as much ghost story as it is sci-fi. I'm not quite sure, but I'm finding it stiff going. But there we are. Obviously, also on Apple TV, Ridley Scott's Napoleon is now streaming. That's a sort of 3-hour epic about the rise of Napoleon. I've watched an hour of it so far, which is kind of the start, and I wish it would have gone a little bit quicker at the start. It seems to have gone an hour without really revealing much that couldn't have be done a bit quicker, I feel. But
right.
There's two more hours to go, so, you know, and obviously I'm at the point now where he is about to seize power and make himself emperor. So, I think it might
pep up a bit.
I think it might pep up a bit. Yes, Mr. Robespierre has been overthrown, ending the reign of terror in the French Revolution, and has been sent off to his own guillotine by the rest of the revolutionaries. And if those of you, anybody doesn't know who Robespierre is and what he was responsible for in the French Revolution, look him up. Not a very pleasant person, so I'm not surprised really that, like a lot of violent revolutionaries, he ends up meeting the fate he meted out to plenty of other people. There we are. And obviously we've talked a couple of times about the Masters of the Air, which is, you know, very, very good. I believe it's the 15th of March. So what's that, a week away now? I lose track. There is going to be a documentary on Apple TV Plus called The Bloody 100th, which is obviously a documentary about the truth behind the Masters of the Air dramatization. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yes.
They were known as the Bloody 100th, as you might guess, because the very high casualty figures. Flying in the 100th was very dangerous. Well, pretty sure flying in any bombing group was pretty dangerous, but the 100th...
yeah. Actually, back in those days, flying anything that was made out of sort of canvas and was
and
quite dangerous.
And wood and bits of wire and whatnot, yeah. Rickety, right, I think, was as you described them the other week.
Rickety.
Yeah. Although sometimes... I know it's not the real thing, but they've done a very good job in the show when the crews come back of showing the state of the airplanes, you know, that have been shot full of holes and big chunks of black knocked out of them and all sorts. It's they do a very good job of showing the state of the returning planes. So I do highly recommend it. I do highly recommend it. So I'm looking forward to the documentary to add some, you know, real background. And I think that's probably about it, isn't it? Yes, Napoleon and what else have we got? The rest of it's not a lot really, Nick. Apple apparently have backtracked. Apple have backtracked on home screen web apps. or progressive web apps, as they are more specifically called. And apparently Apple will not be removing home screen web apps from the European Union after all. Apple announced that web apps would no longer work on iOS devices in the European Union. Actually, I think it was only the iPhone, strictly speaking. But due to
Jolly
rules...
good. So, ringing up Apple every 5 minutes, for Tim, has obviously done the trick.
Yeah. due to rules around browsers in the EU Digital Markets Act, which is where basically the EU requested that all browsers on iOS had equal footing, and Apple said that it was very difficult for them to make web apps work in other browser engines without doing a huge amount of engineering work, so they were simply going to pull it. They were simply going to pull that option from Safari in the European Union. However, a small amount of users might be a very vocal bunch. In a developer support document on Friday, Apple said, "We have received requests to continue to offer support for home screen web apps in iOS, and therefore we will continue to offer the existing home screen web apps capability in the EU."
The EU do a lot of good, and the EU in the past have come up with some great legislation that's protected people and... But there are times when legislation is just so stupid, it's unbelievable. And the unintended consequences of someone standing up and saying, "I think we ought to do this better," or "I don't think we ought to be able to allow these people to do this," and blah, blah, blah. And they end up just making stuff worse.
Yep.
Which is, bad. So EU, you do good stuff. Stop doing the rubbish.
I think I agree with that. They have done some very good things, particularly around privacy and security and so on. And
but you can just go too far with all this legislation and rules.
Of course, the thing is, what you get is, it's always the way when you've got people like Google or Apple who have, you know, quote unquote monopolistic control of an area. Always get the whiners who feel that they can get their way by going to court and creating a stink. And of course, if the people you create a stink about are big enough, you can claim that they're anti-competitive and that they must be regulated. And that's all very well. And sometimes it is true, you know, that big, powerful companies need to be reined in a bit. But it's also very easy to... basically mess everything up by poking your fingers into the pie. And I do believe
And while we're talking about that, it's rant time. I'm going to get on my soapbox. What is it with everyone telling Apple what they can and what they can't do with the stuff they invented, with the stuff they actually put their money into to design and to build and support? Why has it suddenly become perfectly acceptable to actually say to Apple, "You can't"? It's a little bit like me building a go-kart, and I get on the go-kart at the top of the road, and halfway down the road, someone stops me and says, "We've got better wheels than that. You should have our wheels on that, not your wheels. And why are you riding it? Why shouldn't I be riding it?"
Yes.
And you think, "Well, hold on a minute. I built this. This is my thing. These are my wheels. Why shouldn't I ride it?"
I wish to use my wheels. Thank you.
Exactly. And this is what's driving me mad. And we have another story here.
We do, to go with it, which is your friend and mine, the class action lawsuit. And,
but this time it's over iCloud's 5 gigabyte limit. I mean,
yes.
it's their tool. It's their thing. If they only want to give 5 gig, let's face it, we've talked about it often enough. We all want them to give more memory, more storage rather. And they really should do that. But to take a class action lawsuit and sue them over the fact that they decided to do that with their thing doesn't make any sense to me at all.
The proposed class action lawsuit alleges that Apple has marked up iCloud prices to the point where the service is almost pure profit, right? The plaintiffs...
Well, it's their thing to make pure profit with.
Exactly. They accuse Apple of rigging the competitive playing field by only allowing iCloud to manage device backups and other storage needs. I'm not sure that's actually true, is it? Is that true?
Well, even if it isn't true, they're their devices.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, is it simply that Apple is so big that everyone feels that somehow they own a portion of them?
Yeah, see, Apple device holders are given 5 gigabytes of free cloud storage space. But as Apple iCloud revenues attest, most users find this insufficient and purchase a supplemental iCloud storage plan. Infamously, the free tier of iCloud has remained at 5 gigabytes of storage since it was introduced in 2011, which, you know, I think we all agree Apple should have by now increased it a bit, you know.
Yeah.
But
I mean, this sounds, what I find frustrating is this sounds as if it's an unusual practice. But, I mean, you only have to open a newspaper open a web page these days, and you've got free, get this now. And in the small print it says, and it'll cost you £200 a year.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the people are constantly promising something and then making it so that you have to buy their thing. This isn't new. I don't know. Yeah.
Exactly.
I just find the whole thing really frustrating, because if Apple were the only player, if Apple were the only person who had a phone and an iPad and there was no other one anyone else you can go to, and that the iCloud is the only place you can go to, then there'd be a monopoly. But there are other places you can go to, and there are other places you can store stuff. So I don't understand. It just, other than they're big, let's sue them. I wouldn't be a bit surprised. This is probably not at all true, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it's the blooming lawyers who are actually driving all these class action lawsuits, because they get more money out of it. Sorry, rant over.
You're quite right. Anyway, so hang on, a bit further down here. Much of the lawsuit's emphasis is on the fact that iPhone users only have one option when it comes to a full device backup, and that is the iCloud service. And iCloud only gives you 5 gigabytes for free. Right. Apple arbitrarily requires its mobile device holders use iCloud to back up certain file types, which are mainly device settings, apps, and app data. With respect to other file types, photos, videos, Apple mobile devices can select other cloud-based storage providers servicing the market. Right, now, as far as I can see, to be honest, right, as long as 5 gigabytes is big enough to store the stuff that Apple insists you back up in iCloud, then I don't see what the problem is. It was only recently that I bothered to up my iCloud beyond 5 gig, and that's only because I'd started putting a bit more stuff in iCloud.
Yeah.
Previous to that, I've never got anywhere near it.
I've got the 2 terabyte iPad, the 13-inch one, you know, 12.9-inch one. But the fact is, it's really hard to use 2 terabytes because of the way Apple... Because it isn't a storage medium as such, because Apple use iCloud in the way that they do, using 2 terabytes is almost impossible. Even if you choose to store lots and lots of stuff in iCloud from your apps that you've got, 2 terabytes is a lot of storage, unless you are using it for a backup, and I don't mean a backup of your iPad, I mean a backup of your computer. Mm. I mean, I suppose Apple could get around this just by saying, basically, if you own a 16 gig a phone, you get 16 gig of storage. And if you have a 5 gigabyte, you know, that would solve the problem and make it go away, perhaps. But it just seems an awful lot of fuss over nothing.
It is fuss over nothing. If you want my opinion, I've only upped mine to the 99p a month thing. And that was only because I wanted to put more stuff in the iCloud /files.
Yes.
When I was doing less of that, all the stuff that you need to back up in iCloud went inside 5 gig, because photos, they give you zillions for nothing, and apps are backed up, but only as a list. The apps themselves go away, and it just keeps a list and pulls them back down from the app store. So all you're really
And we have, is... I mean, we've been complaining about the 5 gig limit for a long time because it does seem
stingy,
ridiculously small in these days of general storage. But that still wouldn't make me want to sue them over it. And again, it's their decision to do it the way they do it. And if it's the same way as when you buy a Mac, you have to decide what memory you want. Now, a lot of people will say, oh, well, because the memory's built in and whatever, but it hasn't always been like that. Apple have always done that, and they've always had a premium on their RAM.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, don't buy a Mac. Yeah. I mean, it's as simple as that. Just don't buy a Mac.
I mean,
and
yeah.
I don't understand why we have to try and force Apple to be doing all these different things simply because what they chose to do with their systems doesn't please some people. It's
can't please all the people all of the time.
You certainly can't. Yes,
but
if you're a grumpy old man like me, you can't please me most of the time.
But I mean, my take on it, it is basically the same. But it's like, okay, so 5 gigabytes of storage for free seems a bit stingy, but it's free. They're not forcing you to buy iCloud. If you don't wish to buy iCloud, you don't have to.
And you don't have to back up your phone. I wouldn't recommend that. I wouldn't recommend that to anyone. Because
but you don't have
especially if you've got lots of photos on it that you want to keep. But you don't have to back it up.
You don't have to back it up to iCloud. You can back it up to your Mac.
You don't. Yes. So there are alternatives, and that's why I can't understand what this article's on about, really.
Hopefully it will be laughed out of court, as you know, who can say, but yes, that's a shout at the iCloud one.
Well, they've already made Apple back down on the paying for things through external stores and stuff already. And even then, I still don't understand why they should have to do that. But again, it's almost like Apple become the sort of, because they're so huge, they become the sort of de facto standard. And therefore everyone owns a bit of it. And why shouldn't we have a say? And I suppose I have some sympathies with that opinion. But as I've just said, there are alternatives.
There we go.
Good luck with your class action lawsuit. I doubt if you'll win anything.
And even if you do, win, Apple will probably say, "Oh, we'll make it 10 gig." You know, we'll make it.
That's right. The day before the settlement or something. Yeah,
we'll make it.
Oh, okay, we'll change our minds.
We'll make it 10 gigabytes, and we'll make it 10 gigabytes, and there'll be an award. And the judge will make an award, and it will be, work out at $4 each or something.
That's right.
That's what normally happens in these things, Oh, Apple forced to give $15 million to people in class action lawsuit. Ah, right, you get 99 cents each. Whoop-de-doo. Yes. There we are. M3 Macs have now been added to the do-it-yourself repair program, unsurprisingly, as Apple's thing. Done the web apps. Apparently, according to several reports, Apple ID could be getting rebranded to Apple Account.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
Wow.
Really? Is that worthy of someone's time?
No, not really. I think somebody in the Slack room, it might have been Alistair, said, if this is true, it's only probably to do with the sort of negative connotations that have begun to be attached to ID, your ID. So, but who knows? I mean, this is apparent, Apple could get a branding makeover to Apple Account. Yeah, well, Ferrari could get a branding makeover to a sleeping rhinoceros.
They've got all that money. They've got all that money they're not going to spend on the Titan project now, so why not?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, exactly. That's a kind of nothing burger of a story. Zoom. This is not strictly an Apple. Zoom pulls the plug on old versions of Mac iOS. This is PC Mag UK. Actually, the headline, I'm reading that in a clickbaity voice, but it's not actually. If your phone is running an aging version of the iOS, Zoom support will be coming to an end. Zoom's 26th of February update is the final one, which will support iOS 11 and 12. Users will have to update by the next update of Zoom because, they're dropping support for 11 and 12. And then it says here, iOS 17 is the most recent version, and it only supports Apple smartphones back to the 10R. But then it says here, given that iOS 11 and 12 launched in 2017 and 2018, this should not really affect very many people. Zoom are also ending support for Android devices which run on x86 and x64 architectures. And these devices haven't been produced by any Android phone maker in years. So, really, that's more of a...
I expect there are a few elderly people out there who still have a really early phone with a... And they've never updated the OS in it.
Yeah. But, I mean...
Who may be inconvenienced, but it's not going to be many.
I mean, what are we looking at there? 7 years?
Yeah.
6, 7 years? You know, if you really are hanging on to a phone that's old, you know, that old, I think it might be time to consider getting a new one. And German says there will be no Apple event planned for upcoming iPads and Macs. Apparently, Apple will not plan to hold a traditional event to unveil iPads and Macs. Instead, he says, Apple plans to announce the products on its website with a series of online video and marketing campaigns. Maybe not. Who can say? Not convinced by that, to be honest. Not convinced.
He doesn't actually say in the article when at all.
No.
Oh, it says... No, it doesn't. It just talks about... It talk about being vague.
Yeah, right. I think basically he's saying Apple might not hold their traditional, you know, March event, October event, whatever. I'm not sure. I think those, you know, those special events that they hold with Tim on the stage and then some videos are good, you know.
I quite like this first top-rated comment. It says, good. We don't need a whole song and dance. They're just revision updates. Plus, Apple events are so dull these days, the less the better. That's fair enough. That's someone's opinion.
that's his opinion or their opinion, and they are entitled to hold it.
They are.
I actually enjoy the events. You know.
I quite enjoy the events too. I suppose part of me wishes that we didn't spend so much time talking about really tiny changes and things. It would be nice to have a short event that just concentrates on the really important stuff. You know, knowing that there's a new set of emojis really doesn't float my boat, really.
No. You know, oh, yes. And for anybody who hasn't already figured it out, 17.4, by my estimation, will arrive next week as we record this, because on Thursday I got a beta update which was not tagged as beta, which means usually it's the release candidate. So there's a good chance, barring there being some, you know, terrible showstopper or something that makes them do an RC2, which is not never happened, but it doesn't happen very often. I would expect I'm going to, you know, the developer builds usually come out on a Tuesday and the public beta builds are usually on a Thursday. So I would guess by Thursday next week, 17.4 and all, you know, iOS and so what, you know, iPad OS are likely to all go
update,
live.
Update. I think that's all the Apple stuff, isn't
that's
it?
All the Apple stuff, basically. That's the security stuff. I think Alistair sent this one in. Windows 11 borrows Apple iPhone as a webcam feature for Android. And Alistair says that's not all he's noticed, and he's got a new Windows PC, I believe, for work. It has no physical buttons on the trackpad, but the bottom of the trackpad still clicks. There's tap to drag. Three-finger swipe up reveals all windows and desktops. And it says here, the tap to drag gesture is tragically flawed as it does not have any form of drag lock. So you have to be able to complete the drag and drop in the available area of the trackpad, which is not as big as Apple.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
That would be a bit of a problem.
I have come across this before on Windows laptops where you can only drag it as far as you can get on the trackpad. But there you go. It's as always, you know, people steal. Everybody steals everybody else's stuff. But,
of course they do. Because if if someone comes up with a really good idea,
everybody
that is, you know, really intuitive, then obviously everyone wants to use it.
Yeah, precisely. What else have we got? I've got not a lot, really, Nick. Vinny and the Squirrels, if you want a laugh. Yes, if you want a laugh, Vinny and the Squirrels. Forget the M3 and the A17 Pro. Apple might already be designing chips on 2 nanometer by iMore.
Wow, that's insightful, isn't it?
Isn't that insightful? Especially after last week we highlighted that TSMC had said 2 nanometer process on schedule for 2025, I believe. So, yeah, who'd have thought it? The chip designers...
Might have thought anyone thinking ahead, my word.
Might actually be designing stuff for the process that should be ready to make them when they're finished designing them. Yeah. Or perhaps you wait until the processor, you know, the fab is running and then think about how you're going to build something. No. Duh. So, yeah.
Well done, Imore.
Yeah, well done. I'm sure there's probably some stuff. I haven't even read it. I just put it in there because the headline is so... You know, forehead slapping. And apparently, also from iMore, who maybe they were a bit short of stories this week, new Apple Watch bands tipped for spring launch, iOS 17.4 code reveals. So,
They've really got someone going through the code to find out whether a watch strap's.
No, probably
whether
not.
A watch strap is being launched.
I have no. What it means is somebody's found a mention of some colour or something else that doesn't actually exist, or code number or some such amazing.
Yeah, get a life, some of these people.
Really? They're going to be new watch bands in a spring launch, same as they had an autumn collection of bands. And then before that, they had the 2023 spring bands, and then the 2022 autumn bands, and the 2022. Yeah, they've been bringing out the selection of, you know, fashion collection of bands pretty much every year
from the beginning. Yeah.
So, you know, since time immemorial, or at least the birth of the watch, anyway.
The watch.
So, yes, there you go. A bit facepalm, those two. For the snippets, Apple TV Plus gains over 50 movies for a limited time. This was on Mac Rumors, but I will immediately tell you, only in the US and only for a limited period. So all the rest of us who are not in the US, as Alistair promptly pointed out, as ever, not outside the US. So
yeah.
I've looked through it. It's a reasonable collection of film. It looks like they've done a deal with somebody like Paramount to...
Yes. Yeah, I've seen a lot of these. Anyway.
I've seen a very large number of these, and the ones that I haven't heard of or haven't seen, I don't really particularly bother me. But I don't know who they've done a deal with, but they've got 50 fairly well-known movies, none of them particularly new, to be honest.
I hate this regionalization of media. It ought to have been done away with years ago.
I know. What was it?
Media should be available anywhere in the world.
It's all licensing and Lord
knows
what.
It'll all be money. It's all about money.
Licensing and whatnot. But I was
so irritating.
It's particularly irritating when we live in a globalised world, because I was particularly miffed the other day. I was reading either Apple News or maybe something somewhere else, and it was like, the best sci-fi movie you don't know, now streaming on Netflix. So it's like, okay, well, have a look at this. Read the thing, sounded interesting, looked like it might be something I'd be interested in. Went to Netflix, searched it. Nope.
Not there.
US only.
And the frustrating thing about it is, if you are determined enough, I'm sure you can find a way around it.
Oh, of course you can.
And stream them anyway. So what... don't get me onto copyright. You know my feelings about copyright. Needs to come. It just needs to be brought up to the 21st century. Indeed. We need to start being sensible about it.
Indeed.
There we go.
There we are.
I'm quite happy to pay.
Just, you know. Anyway. yes, this particular film that sounded really interesting to me, and no, not available in the UK.
How very annoying.
There we are. And the Worth a Chirp Essential Tips comes from Donnie, and this is jolly handy because it says the 10 new things your iPhone can do in next week's iOS 17.4 update. And I don't think we'll bother to go through all of them, but well, maybe we'll. You can generate podcast transcripts.
You do you think it'd really cope with my Brummie accent?
Well,
I think it probably wouldn't.
The people who have experimented with it say it's pretty good. I think.
Go right. Okay.
I think Carl might have used it. Anyway, protect messages from quantum attack. Support for the next generation CarPlay. Siri can now read incoming messages in other languages. Stolen device protection away from home, which is the thing we talked about before with the delay. Stopwatch gets a live activity. Well, that's exciting, but there you go. for those who have access to Apple Cash, which I think is US only, you can now generate virtual card numbers so as not to expose your real card number.
Oh, right. Okay, that's good security-wise.
Cloud gaming services are now supported.
Yay!
You can set a contactless payment provider. Other than Apple Pay, I believe that means you can
I'll probably download the Xbox Cloud Gaming app when that's available.
If you're in the EU, of course.
I have got one on my phone, but it must be using a browser somehow.
Oh, yeah, probably. And support for alternative app stores, if you're in the EU, of course. There we are. But
nothing incredibly exciting, but
no. But there are other things as well. That's not all of it, but it's not a bad thing to have because, as I said before the show, Nick, you know, if you're like me and you go on the betas from the start, by the time the release comes, you can't remember what's new and what's not. After 3 months, it's just normal. It's just how the phone is. So there you go.
Apple introduce all sorts of things that hardly any of us use.
Of course they do, all the time.
Because that's the nature of the... Because it can do so much. Introduced that only a subset of people will actually find useful. But that's good. It's still development, isn't it?
All good stuff. Yeah. So there we go. As I say, a bit of a mixed bag this week and quite a lot of sort of little stories. But there we are. We've done all the stories for the week, Nick. So we shall wrap it up. So, as per usual, you can find us in the Slack room. All the stuff is in the Slack room. You can still find me over on X Twitter as @Serenak, S-E-R-E-N-A-K. And, of course, all our stuff should be over at EssentialApple.com. And last of all, don't forget our appeal for the mission to seafarers for old but usable smartphones and internet-capable tablets. Look in the show notes for details on how you can donate those to seafarers in need. And thank you for anybody who has already. My friend Andrew Dotchin, Reverend Canon of Felix Doe, will be ever so grateful. Anyway, with that, I think Nick and I will say goodbye until next time. So,
we will.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
For listening to us here on the Essential Apple Podcast. We appreciate your time. If you'd like to make a small donation towards the cost of our show, please feel free to visit our Patreon or our Pinecast tips jar. You can find the links in the show notes. And if you've already contributed or do already contribute, thank you very much. We really appreciate it. And thank you very much. This show is part of the MyMac Podcasting Network, where you can follow such excellent shows as Tim and David on Geeks Hub and also the Tech Fan Podcast. You can find Lisa and Melissa with their most excellent geekiest show ever. And of course, you can find Diagnosis with the My Mac podcast itself. So why not head over to mymac.com and check out some of the other shows on the My Mac podcasting network.
Hello and good evening. This is Gaz for the My Mac podcast. And we know you have your pick of high-quality downloadable audio content, and we appreciate that you choose ours.
Quite right, Old Bean. This is Guy, and we're here to say that the My Mac podcast is the right choice to make. Intelligent, cultured, and downloaded by only the finest and most educated people.
Indeed. In fact, we restrict our delightful missives to only those best suited... Guy, I can't go on with this. Who are we kidding? The My Mac podcast is probably one of the most accessible shows there is.
Gaz, we're trying to up our reputation here.
Oh, shut it. Listen, folks, tired of tech podcasts that talk over your head and go on too long, taking themselves so seriously, you'd think they were the ones making the product? Then you should listen to the MyMac.com podcast. At least 3 good chuckles per segment.
If my math is right, that's about 10 laughs per show.
Right. Because 3 times 3 is 10. Sometimes I really wonder about you, Guy.
No need to wonder where to find the podcast. Just go to iTunes and search for My Mac. Subscribe and jump into the fun.
You know, we're part of the Stoplight Network, and there are a lot of important people there.
Well, we did say we hardly know anyone important, though there was that time I was less than 30 feet away from the Woz, and I could have sworn we made eye contact.
Most likely, he was having stomach cramps.
Yeah, that would explain why he was doubled over at the time.
The MyMac.com podcast. Enjoy it. Era Kappa.
This has been the Essential Apple Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we look forward to you joining us again another time. Until then, goodbye. Get off the laptop. You know, not helpful. Oh, Finny. God, grief.
I'll let you go and scold the dog.
I've got to try and get him off my laptop and me so that I can move. I know what he wants, but unfortunately, Vinny, you're not helping yourself, because if I can't get up, I can't do anything for you. All right, Nick. I'll see you later, mate.
Right, yeah. Have a good week.
All right.
See you.
Bye.